Divine in the Iliad and the Odyssey. A premonition I really had, it was prophecy. Back in the kitchen, now where we at is Monopoly.
Welcome, welcome to From the Roots Up. I'm your host, Sean Frame, and back for another week more talk about the things that matter to us. I know, why do we do this? I know, it's a Sunday morning. You're like, I'm just trying to enjoy my coffee and maybe just have a moment of peace before I got to go back to my work week. But, you know, what I hope is that when you listen to this, maybe you get a little fired up, sure, but maybe you understand your world a little better. You have a feeling that maybe your neighbors aren't out to get you, that we're all kind of in this thing together, and that we could be working together to solve some of the challenges we all face. If that's what happens for even a few of you out there, well, then I feel like this has been well worth the effort. And I got to say, I really enjoy having the conversation that I have with you all and also with the folks we bring on to the show. This week, you're going to love this one. If you live in Northern California or anywhere in their service area, you're going to love the fact that we're talking about PG&E today. And everybody's like, boo. I know I should throw some sound effects in there, right? We're also going to be talking about what they are, which is an investor-owned utility, also known as an IOU. I think that's an amazing acronym. And I wish it was more true than, I wish it was the way they thought about what they do. Like IOU, a stable supply of electricity and gas. IOU, a world where we're not under threat of climate change because we're burning fossil fuels every day. IOU, a bill that you can afford to keep your house warm in the winter and cool in the summer. But at any rate, that IOU just means investor-owned utility, meaning investors own PG&E and many of the other for-profit utilities that we all have to get our electricity and gas from. Or where, you know, some places it's, I don't know, heating oil or propane. I mean, there's lots of stuff, but they're mostly investor-owned utilities. You know, I've lived in an area served by PG&E, and many of you in our listening area do as well. I'm fortunate enough to be living in an area now that has a public utility, and that's somewhat better. But you know, living under the rule, the tyranny of an investor-owned utility means living under the threat that some investors need to make a profit will someday shut your lights off. Make it impossible for you to heat your home or cool your home because they don't care. The investors, the distant investors of these utilities don't particularly care whether your lights are on or off, whether your heat's on or off, whether your AC is on or off. What they care about is getting a steady stream of money in their pockets and an amount that increases every single year. So I focus on PG&E because I think, you know, like obviously that's where we're broadcasting here in Auburn. You know, a lot of your listeners in this listener area, all the people are out there. Many of them are very familiar with PG&E and not in the way that we would like to be.
Now let's continue our broadcast with music.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net, or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Let's talk a little bit about what PG&E is known for doing. Well, first of all, as a company, they've been convicted of 84 felony manslaughter counts. 84. I'm pretty sure that if an individual had been convicted of anywhere close to that number of felony manslaughter counts, they would be serving time in prison. However, when you're a corporation, who are you going to imprison? Are you going to imprison the CEO or the CFO or, you know, the person in charge of maintenance? Well, in America, that's not what happens. You're actually prevented from being put in prison for the acts of your company, even though the company is an entity that, as we've discussed in other episodes, has been given rights as if they're an individual. But still, they were fined $4 million. $4 million. Now, that sounds to us, obviously, like that's an enormous amount of money. For some of us, that's more than we might gather in a lifetime. For an investor-owned utility like PG&E, that's like saying, hey, could you cut that penny in half and toss it over here? That's your fine. And so, you know, they act as if that's true. You know, their shareholders will look at the fines versus the cost of say, I don't know, maintaining their lines. And they say, gee, $4 million seems like nothing compared to the, you know, tens of millions potentially, or even hundreds of millions of keeping our system maintained, of putting lines underground, et cetera. They were found liable, by the way. PG&E was found liable for at least 31 wildfires that have killed at least 113 people. And, you know, as this show ages, right, that number is going to go up because PG&E has, you know, lines running through some of the most wildfire-prone parts of our state. And they clearly, you know, have not it was shown in the past. I'm not saying anything that's not out there in the public news. I'm not out here giving my opinion on this. Like, it's, you can go read the newspapers that, you know, there was direct linkage between the maintenance of their lines and the fires being started. So, and that's why they got, the company was convicted of those 84 manslaughter charges. You know, also, and some people forget this, they were also the company that didn't maintain their gas lines in San Bruno and blew up a big portion of that city. That was before all the wildfires, and it has sort of been drifted off into the past, but they were also found liable for not properly maintaining their gas lines in San Bruno in what led up to the explosions that happened there. So again, not my opinion, just this is in the news. You can go out and look it up yourself and make your own conclusion about what all that means. What I'm trying to say is, please don't sue me, PG&E, for telling the truth about you. At any rate, you know, the thing is that I, as someone who delivered aid to the victims of the campfire in Paradise, for example, as somebody who lived adjacent to, you know, other fires that that they caused, I've seen the tragedy up close of the downstream impact of, you know, putting your corporate profits, your shareholders in front of the people who you provide electricity to, in front of the people who whose communities are in risk when, at risk when you don't maintain the lines and they start a fire. Here's the worst part of it all. When PG&E was sued by all these folks downstream of the fires they caused, rather than, you know, pay the people, they threatened bankruptcy, and out of that, they settled with people for a fraction of what they would have gotten otherwise, and paid part of that settlement in their own stock. Yeah, you heard me right. They actually gave people who had been harmed by them shares of their stock and made them shareholders. I cannot imagine a more tragically ironic thing to do to somebody than that, because now the victims of the fire, in order to be made whole, are hoping that PG&E's share price goes up. They're actually rooting for the company that caused them the problems. I'm just going to let that land for a second. Think how you would feel if that were you. When we say investor-owned utilities, though, you know, we don't mean like utilities that are owned by mom-and-pop investors, you know, owning a few shares, right? If you look at PG&E, the company's primarily owned by giant investors. A recent look at who owns PG&E broke it down like this. Vanguard Group holds 254 million shares-ish, you know, and these numbers obviously change from day to day. BlackRock holds 194 million shares. FMR, I don't even know who that is. They hold 187 million shares. JP Morgan Chase & Company holds 128 million shares. Massachusetts Financial Services holds 114 million shares. State Street holds 111 million shares. These are recent numbers from, you know, a couple years ago. Like I said, those numbers could change, but it gives you an idea of who these investors are when we talk about an investor-owned utility, right? These are giant financial corporations. They own these shares because they're putting them in mutual funds and they're, you know, but let's be clear, like they have an outsized influence in what a company like PG&E does, because if they were to sell those shares and say invest them in a different investor-owned utility or in a different sector of the economy, that could be devastating to the folks at PG&E who rely on that. And that meaning, when I say that, I mean, you know, the CEO, the C-suite, the corporate suite level people, the people who have lots of shares of their stock, right? Those people don't want to see that happen, because if it did, the share price would plummet. It would put their job in jeopardy. It would also, you know, lower their compensation significantly. So when, you know, a Vanguard Group or a State Street or a JP Morgan comes to PG&E and says, we want X, Y, or Z, you can be sure that PG&E listens. And, you know, of course, these companies place people on the PG&E board, too, to make sure that PG&E is doing what they want them to do. And this means that, you know, really, all they want is consistent revenue growth, consistent dividends, and they don't care about things like maintaining lines. They, in fact, you know, what they really, if the fines are going to be like a slap on the wrist, like $4 million, they would really want PG&E not to spend a penny on things like maintaining their lines or undergrounding their lines, because the cost of doing nothing is so low. It's much lower than the cost of doing something. And, you know, this is capitalism, right? Like if you want your the company you've invested in to do better, you want them to spend less and make more. And in this case, you know, the sad part of that is that PG&E is providing electricity to people. It's an essential service that we all rely upon. And the profit motive is at odds with the mission of PG&E, which is to deliver power. They've been given a special place, by the way, to do that. They've been given basically a monopoly, right? There's not like PG&E lines running down one side of the street and some other company's lines running down the other side of the street, and you can choose which one to connect to your house. No, these companies are given a monopoly in the areas they operate. And if you, and then, but not only can you not go somewhere else and get your electricity from them, really, although there are ways to do some of that now, but you, like you could generate your own. But you still are required to be able to live in a house. You must be connected to this utility. You are required to be connected to them. You cannot cut the lines to your house, put up your own solar panels and batteries and say, I'm out. Nope. If you are, they have gotten it. So you cannot walk away from them. You are required to do business with them. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. So let's talk about what happens when, you know, so much money is going to a private utility, an investor-owned utility, and what that means to all of us. Well, we've talked about the influence of money in politics in other episodes, but let's look at specifically what happens with a company like PG&E. Well, if you look at the members of the state legislature, the lawmaking body, state senators, state assembly people, and where they get their money, you're going to find that PG&E has given money to a vast majority of them. And in many cases, they also spent additional money supporting them, quote, independently. We've talked about that in our Money on Politics episode, where, you know, they can spend unlimited funds if they want in support of or in opposition to candidates. It was certainly true in my run for state assembly, where my opponent and the eventual victor in that race took the maximum contribution, and PG&E also spent additional money on her at her behalf for billboards and mailers and many other things. And ironically, even people who speak out against PG&E have often taken their money, which seems counterintuitive, but that just tells you how confident PG&E is in the people they buy. Because, you know, somebody like Joe Patterson right here in Placer County, you know, says, I'm going to take on PG&E. And then if you go look, he's taken the max from them. He's taken their money. Like, so, I mean, he can go out and on one day shout in this, you know, oh, PG&E is bad, they're evil. And then the other day take the money and put it in his campaign account. And why? Because, well, you know, in California, Republicans hold a minority of the state legislature. They're never going to get their laws passed. So they can go and shout about anything they want. And their corporate backers like PG&E are unconcerned because they know that if Joe Patterson is proposing to do anything, and his bill was kind of a joke, it could have been written on a bar napkin. But even if he's out there talking about how bad PG&E is, they're confident that he will never do anything to harm them, and he will always vote their way if they need him to. And that's all they're really concerned about. And the amount of money they spend on that, it's nothing to them. It's inconsequential to their bottom line. When it taken in whole across the state, of course, it's a lot of money. And I would argue that their shareholders would be screaming and yelling. You know, the vanguards and state streets of the world would be screaming and yelling if they thought that the money PG&E spent on politics didn't yield results to the bottom line. Let's talk about the governor's influence for a minute. They, you know, our governor has taken money from PG&E. And I bet if you went back as far as you want to look, because PG&E has been around for a while, you're going to see PG&E money in the governor's campaign coffers for every governor we've had for probably my lifetime and more. And, you know, why? Well, the governor gets to appoint the California Public Utilities Commission. And I think we talked earlier about the fact that utilities are monopolies. And as such, they are, and because they're providing an essential service, they're supposed to be highly regulated, meaning there are things they should not be able to do because they've been given a monopoly power by the state legislature, by our government, to provide power to people, to provide electricity and gas and whatever else. So the California Public Utilities Commission was created to regulate these monopolies because they have monopoly power, they have no competition, they can do whatever they want. In the absence of regulation and in the need to maximize profits, there are many horrible things they might do without regulation. So somebody said, we'll create this California Public Utilities Commission. They'll look at rate increases. They will demand that the these monopoly utilities operate in the public interest. Well, who appoints these members of the California Public Utilities Commission? That's our governor. And so what we've seen over time is that the California Public Utilities Commission has sort of become a revolving door with PG&E and with the people they regulate, the other utilities in our state. So here's how it goes. The governor gets a lot of money from PG&E as a candidate. They win, then appoint members of the California Public Utilities Commission. The members of the California Public Utilities Commission allow PG&E and their other utilities they regulate to raise rates, charge customers for making the improvements needed to prevent wildfires, so pass along those costs to us, and change things like the fixed charges that customers pay. PG&E shareholders then get more money. They get rich. New members are appointed to the CPUC by either the current governor or after an election of a new governor who also took PG&E money. The CPUC members who step down take highly paid positions at PG&E and other places that they regulated. So it's kind of a, hey, thanks for being such a good regulator. Here's a job where you can just go show up once in a while and we're going to give you huge money, hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary, sometimes millions. And then rinse and repeat, right? It's so common that people have gone straight from CPUC to the utility and sometimes even back again that literally we would have to do an entire show if we were just to give you the names of all these former California Public Utilities Commission commissioners who then went right through the revolving door to the people they regulate. It is the way it is done. And, you know, we're going to talk in a minute about how the CPUC, how our legislature really advantages these investor-owned utilities like PG&E. We've got Dave Rosenfeld from the Solar Rights Alliance, and we'll be right back on From the Roots Up. From the Roots Up is brought to you by the Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
All right. Well, we have Dave Rosenfeld, the executive director of Solar Rights Alliance, here with us today. And, you know, Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Sean.
So this entire show, we're talking about, you know, investor-owned utilities. I've sort of told people that's the IOU, and it's not the way we all think about IOU, like the maybe the good way or positive way, you know, investor-owned utility. But we've also talked about PG&E in particular, because so many of the people in our listening area are PG&E customers. And then we've talked about, you know, sort of the influence that PG&E has in the legislative process. But before we get into all that, we certainly are going to talk about those things. Why don't you tell us about the Solar Rights Alliance?
Yeah, so the Solar Rights Alliance is the nonprofit association of California solar customers. We believe that everyone has the right to make energy from the sun without unreasonable interference from the utilities or the government. We keep track of what politicians and the regulators and the utilities are up to. And then we alert the public when there's a threat to rooftop solar or an opportunity to make it available to more people. 15 years ago, when Arnold Schwarzenegger launched the Million Solar Roofs initiative, you know, there wasn't very much solar in California. And to get it, you had to be either rich or really, really handy, like kind of a DIY person. And until the CPUC stepped in and made a proper mess of this, you didn't have to be either. And today, 60% of all solar customers are middle and working class. Half are people of color. It's very, very, you know, everyday people are, it's just getting into the hands now of everyday people.
It feels like there was a time when it was just like all anybody was talking about. Everywhere I went, people were like, you got solar, are you getting solar? Like, it, and then suddenly it was like, I didn't hear about it so much. So what happened or what is happening?
Yeah, it's a what is happening. And, you know, people are still getting solar, but it has gone off a cliff since the Newsom administration made some big changes that essentially just gutted the progress that we've made. And so, you know, rooftop solar, like I said, you know, in the beginning, there wasn't much. Governor Schwarzenegger, and it wasn't just him, it was the legislature as well. That initiative was wildly successful. You know, it made it from something that was like a very niche product for wealthy people to something that everyday people were getting and are getting. It was starting to actually also then go on multifamily homes in a really, really big way. And this is great for all the reasons you've just given. In addition, it also is reducing the cost of the grid, because when you make your own electricity, then the utility doesn't have to spend as much stuff on stuff like poles and wires. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. So it was like net benefit. But at the very same time that rooftop solar was taking off, the utilities, and this goes back now to around 2010, 2013, in back rooms, and not just here, but all around the country, they started talking about how are we going to kill this thing? Because they never liked it, but they didn't really take it seriously. And all of a sudden now consumers were getting it, and they saw the price dropping, and they realized this is going to become like the car or a cell phone, right, or a TV. And so there's now leaked documents. We have them on our website from boardroom meetings at the national level, where they basically are very open in saying, this is reducing our profits. We've got to take this competition off the table, but it's popular. So we have to figure out a way to besmirch it. And so that's where they came up with the lie, where they inverted the truth and basically said, we're going to blame rooftop solar for high rates. And gradually they bought off lots and lots of politicians and other people. They either bought off or they were able to kind of just convince or sucker a little bit of a constellation of nonprofits and academics to give them some cover. And then by the time you got to 2015 or so, the regulators, the Public Utilities Commission, with even just 5 years before, was very pro-rooftop solar. Their studies were pretty clean. Their own research was showing that this thing is a net benefit to ratepayers, both financially and environmentally. But by 2015, you saw a shift. And by the time we got to 2022, they had shifted so far. And this is all at the hands of Governor Newsom. Like, he was completely, he's completely on this train. And we'll talk about why. They gutted the policies, the key policies that led to this growth. And so you can see it on a chart that when those policies went into effect in mid-2023, solar adoptions go off a cliff. And we are now at adoptions are happening now at a level that we haven't seen since 10 years ago.
I mean, you talk about how popular it is, and this is something that I've always felt, you know, that I lived in a pretty conservative town, and it was wildly popular, independent of people's political leanings, ideology, who they voted for. So why would politicians feel safe, or why would they take on something that is so incredibly popular among every one of their voters? I mean, to just a huge number.
What's the politics here? It's very, very, very simple. The utilities have showered California with $1 billion, that's $1 billion with a B, in money since 2020 to buy loyalty, silence, or goodwill. And we've documented this. The money doesn't just go to politicians. A lot of it does. About $200 million of that billion goes to politicians directly as campaign contributions. Gavin Newsom took $2.5 million alone, the biggest recipient. Hundreds more millions go into lobbying. So it's not just give them the money while they're running for office, but then surround them with lawyers and lobbyists and wining and dining and all that kind of stuff. And then they shower also NGOs, academic institutions, trade associations. They spread their money around everywhere. And so, of course, by the time, you know, if you do that on a consistent basis, and if the top politician in the state is also the top recipient of your largesse, like, okay, no duh. Like, of course that's going to happen. And then just one more thing, and we'll dig into this, is the utilities are very smart, and they know that sometimes they're persona non grata. Like, a politician doesn't want to be seen as taking money from PG&E or whatever. So that's okay, because they have their labor union, IBEW. And IBEW has a contract with PG&E. It's called a collective bargaining agreement. Most labor unions have it. This is not casting shade on labor unions. I know, Sean,
you're member of a union myself. I'm on my negotiating team. I negotiate for a collective bargaining agreement. I totally understand what that is. Yeah.
This is no shade, right? It's on unions in general. I'm just saying this particular union, their contract with PG&E says that the union will defend PG&E's business interests against quote unquote competitive challenges. So it is baked into the contract that they are going to defend PG&E's profits against competitors like rooftop solar. And they take that very seriously, and they spend very heavily. And one of the top things so they align 100% with PG&E. And so in a democratic state that is also a very pro-union state, where you have, unfortunately for rooftop solar, one of the most, if not the most powerful labor union is aligned with PG&E on this thing. It's not just that they take a lot of money from the utilities. It's that they take a lot of money from, the utilities labor union. And that's what gets them what they want at this particular moment in time. It doesn't mean that we're cooked, but it just helps to explain why is this happening in democratic, green, climate changey California? That's why.
And, you know, as a union member, I understand why IBEW would want to protect their jobs, right? Like, because let's if you look at it realistically, if more distant generation is being built, more lines are being built, that's just more work, right? And so I completely understand and even sympathize with their need to make sure that their members have jobs. But also, I feel like, especially now with AI coming in, energy demand just spiking and going way beyond what we had ever imagined it would be at this point, right? Going up rather quickly. There's plenty of work for IBEW out there, right? Like, I don't feel like we're done with the grid here and that's it. We're just not going to build it out anymore. Everybody's going to put solar and batteries on their house and then we solve the climate crisis and we don't need a utility. Like, none of that's going to happen, right? Everybody I've ever talked to said, like, rooftop solar is going to be a piece of it, but we're going to have to do massive generation. And that's ideally going to be renewables of all kinds. And a lot of that's going to be distant as well. And still require build out of the grid, and IBEW is going to be doing all that work, or should be, because they are the union that does that work, and these are unionized shops. So, like, I feel like, you know, I understand that they have that in their contract, but I also feel like, man, you know, they're going to get this work, and there's no politician out there. If somebody ran, nobody's going to say, like, that's it. We're going to put batteries in every house and panels on every roof, and we're done. Like, that's never been the case, right?
Absolutely. There's two things to say about this. One is, I'll just elaborate on what you said, which is spot on. Data centers, electrification, right? Just the fact that we're trying to get off fossil fuels, and California still gets 40% of its electricity from fossil fuels, right? There is so much new energy demand. Like, think about what we're doing right now. We're taking essentially the market share of the oil industry, you know, in the car industry, and we're shoving it through PG&E's wires. That's what California's decarbonization project is about. And so there is so much, even with a lot of rooftop solar, there's going to be so many poles and wires that have to get built and maintained. It's unreal. Solar farms and wind farms that are going to have to get built. Already there's a shortage of electricians. Like, there's so much work that they're going to have. There is no competition, you know, there. And the same thing with PG&E, for that matter, or any of the utilities. There is so much profit that they have on the table to make, even with a really robust rooftop solar market. The thing is that PG&E wants it all. You know, their whole mission, right, is maximize the profits. And right now, when you're a monopoly, you have maximized the profits. Now, all of a sudden, little old rooftop solar comes in, and even if it's just a part of it, you're not maximizing your profits. It just explains why it's a difficult politics, even though the public is with us, the public wants this thing, the public doesn't support what the Newsom administration is doing, et cetera.
Yeah, and I feel this every day as somebody who is both very concerned about what's happening with our climate, very concerned about, you know, the affordability of energy just for working class families. And also, you know, I understand the need for, you know, family sustaining jobs that pay a livable wage. I fight for that every day at the table. I'm literally, it's a big part of who I am as a human being. So I see both sides of that issue, but I just wish that there was some way to reconcile those things. It needs to be an upward spiral, and this is not an upward spiral, in my
abundance
opinion.
Right. I mean, like, yeah, the bad guys, essentially, the people that are trying to kill rooftop solar are trying to manufacture scarcity and make it seem like this is a trade-off between one thing or another. And the beauty of what I love about rooftop solar is it's win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win, right? It's like, it's good paying jobs that can't get outsourced. It's real consumer level, kitchen table level solutions for families, you know, that allow themselves to protect their families when the utilities and the government have failed them, right? It's also a way to reduce the cost of the grid. I hope we get to talk about that. It's a way for the state to get to its clean energy goals. And you don't even have to be on board with the state's clean energy goals, and you're helping with it.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com.
We think of PG&E as this sort of self-contained entity, but when you really look at who owns PG&E, you know, it's Wall Street, right? It's Vanguard, it's BlackRock, it's State Street, it's J.P. Morgan Chase, who own hundreds of millions of shares. And really, honestly, they don't care what happens to consumers here. They don't even particularly care what happens to our environment. Many of those investors, by the way, are not even in our country, right? They're somewhere else. These are, you know, like, this is a global pool of investable funds that owns our little utility right here in Northern California, you know, that happens to have been convicted of 84 counts of felony manslaughter. but, you know, how much of this is being pushed by that sort of outside ownership of PG&E? When we talk about investor-owned utility, that's what we're really talking about, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's exactly the internal dynamics of PG&E to be able to say for sure. I think it's clear to me they have a charter and they're acting logically. Their job is to maximize profits. So I assume that everybody that's in that decision-making sphere is going, how do we maximize profits?
And so, wait. Hold on a second, though, because you say that, but they're a utility and they've been given a special place. In other words, they've been given a monopoly. There's not a second set of lines running down the other side of the street that's owned by some other company that is competing on price or service with PG&E. If you are in a PG&E area, you're got PG&E lines connected to your house and a PG&E meter that's running up a PG&E bill that you don't have a choice about.
Emphasis on the word regulators. So let's talk about that, right? So we know, like, there's no surprise here how a private company is going to operate, right? Like, they're going to operate like any private company operates. They're doing what they were set up to do. We said it was a regulated monopoly. The regulators and the politicians that appoint and frankly tell the regulators what to do have failed. They have one job, which is to make a reliable, affordable electricity system. And instead, they just rubber stamped utility spending that bears no relation to actual consumer demand. None. Consumer demand over the last 20 years has been flat. Utility spending on poles and wires has been up 300%. And there's no good explanation for that.
Well, there is, right? That's how they make their money.
And the regulators know that. The regulators themselves are just in that world, right? It's so easy to get captured. And then the politician that appoints and tells them what to do, they can say that they're independent. They're not. They never have been. They weren't independent under Brown. They weren't independent under Schwarzenegger. They weren't independent under Davis. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Our lifetime, I've never seen an independent CPUC.
The executive branch, for Pete's sake. I mean, we can say it's politics.
But I want to put a finer point on what you were saying in terms of, you know, we said that's how they make their money. But I don't think most people understand what you said. So the lines went up 300%. Demand was flat. Why did they build 300% more lines? What's the financial incentive there?
Unbeknownst to most people, the utilities in California do not make their profits selling you electricity. For every dollar that PG&E spends building new poles and wires, they get a 10% guaranteed profit on top of that. That's how it works.
So it must be nice.
When you are printing, if you're printing money for, you just think about
it. It's arbitrage.
I want to spend on poles and wires because I can just tack on, I'll get all that money back from ratepayers because I'll charge that in higher rates, and then you get to tack on 10%. So giddy up, right? Like, and so the regulators know this, which means then when the PG&E comes and says, we want to build some poles and wires over here and over here and over here, they've got to be really, really skeptical. They've got to ask some questions. They need to be saying, well, wait a minute, do we really need these poles and wires? Maybe if we just got more people to do rooftop solar and batteries, we wouldn't need it. Okay, maybe we do need poles and wires over here. This seems like a gold-plated proposal. Can we do this for cheaper? Blah, 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 blah. Regulators didn't do any of that. And of course, so then it was just, sure, yeah, let's spend. Sure, let's spend. Sure, let's spend. There's no auditing done. There's no audit of their spending. And so 20 years of this, right? So this precedes Newsom, that electricity demand has been flat. This is remarkable, right? Like, that's a story in and of itself. Population has been growing, the economy has been growing, but peak electricity demand has been flat because Californians have been doing three things really, really well in the last 20 years. They've been conserving energy, they've been becoming more efficient, and they also put 2 million rooftop solar systems on their roof. And in fact, the amount of energy, the capacity of the 2 million rooftop solar systems is almost exactly the same amount of energy demand that we thought we were going to have that we didn't have. It's about 15,000 megawatts. And so that happened. And the energy planners knew that this was going on. It wasn't like, oh, wow, we look back 20 years. That sure surprised us. It was all there in plain sight. And yet every single year, spend more, spend more, spend more on these poles and wires. Profits. I mean, you can just look at a chart and it's like spending on poles and wires, rates, profits. It's like almost the same hockey stick.
Yeah. You just spend $1 million, get 100,000 profits. Spend $10 million, get $1 million profit. And you can just... The more money you could pour into it, the more money you get back out of it.
And I'm making you pay for all of it. So I'm like, when I say I'm spending money, really what I mean is Sean Frame is going to be spending that money, and you're also going to be paying for profits. I'm PG&E. I don't have to do a damn thing here.
Right. So I raise your rates. I take your money. I put up more poles. I make my profit. I'm like, oh, you know what I need to do is raise your rates again because I need to build some more poles. Right. And hey, and what's the PG&E CEO getting these days? I mean, I don't remember. It's tens of millions, right? Like,
it fluctuates year to year, but 2 or 3 years ago, it was like $70 million, 50 to 70 yeah. million. I forget. It's like the numbers are so big. It's like it could be 10 million. It'd be outrageous.
Right.
But it was like multiples of that. If it was in like this year, then maybe it was only 2 million. Oh, okay.
Oh, like, wow. Rough year.
Well, huh? She's really taking a haircut there. I mean, it's just so crazy.
I happen to live here in Sacramento where I'm on a public utility, and I have had the opportunity to talk to the folks elected there. And they also sort of lowered the rates they were paying on solar, much to my chagrin, because it was actually the thing, one of the main things that prevented me from being able to consider it. So I talked to my elected officials here in Sacramento, and I asked them, you know, straight up, like, what's the deal? And they said, well, our guaranteed cost per kilowatt hour is so much less. And if we were to have rooftop solar everywhere, my gosh, we would have to pass those costs along to the people who can't afford it, the people who live in apartment buildings and multifamily dwellings and, you know, the people who are already most stretched by their dollar. I mean, what do you say to that argument that, you know, that cost of paying middle class and upper middle class folks to put in solar is then passed on to the working class folks living in apartments, for example, who couldn't do that?
It's a lie, and the data supports that it's a lie. It's just not true. When people make their own electricity at home and they share it with their neighbors, then the utility does not have to spend as much money, right, on building poles and wires and other infrastructure. When somebody at SMUD or somebody at the CPUC or whatever says, well, we can do it more cheaply, you know, by doing large scale because you get economies of scale, they're ignoring the cost of poles and wires. Sure, a solar farm out in the desert or a wind farm out somewhere, sure, it is cheaper per kilowatt hour, but you have to transport that power over extremely expensive poles and wires. And we're electrifying the economy, right? We're trying to get people to switch to electric cars and heat pumps and induction stoves, right? You've already talked about data centers. So the build out is only just beginning. And so we're going to have to get more power onto the grid. Okay, the utility, whether it's SMUD or PG&E, is going to have to either do it, or customers can spend or seem to be willing to spend tens of thousands of dollars of their own money to put a power plant on their roof that then requires almost no poles and wires in the whole equation and increasingly a battery. And so whatever numbers that they're coming up with, anytime we have sat down and looked at the numbers that they use to back up their thing, we find that it is filled with garbage. They use the wrong number to calculate how much energy gets produced by the solar panels. There's a commonly used number that even the utilities agree with us on, and they use the wrong number. They use the wrong rates that actually consumers pay. They neglected the fact that most solar customers actually have an energy bill that pays for the fixed costs of the grid. I could go on and on and on. And then the other thing is they presume always in these computer models, whether it's SMUD or PG&E or whatever, they presume that the electricity that you consume at home is a cost somehow. And rooftop solar is exactly like turning off the lights, right? Like if I turn off the lights, I buy less electricity from the utility. If I make some energy and I use that to power my lights instead of it, the utility, in both cases, the utility delivers less energy to me. So SMUD's logic, PG&E's logic, it would mean that basically everyone who turns off the lights and doesn't use their air conditioner as much and installs energy efficient appliances and puts in insulation, that we're all the problem. When people use less when they buy less electricity from the utility, let's forget about if it's rooftop solar or if it's turning off the lights or if it's whatever, you know, hang drying your clothing. When you buy less electricity from the utility, yes, in the short run, the utility reduces their sales, of course. But what utilities are always thinking 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road. What an amazing way to then reduce the amount of money that the utilities have to spend down the road. It's a different way of thinking than a traditional 150-year-old centralized monopoly.
What are things that right now our listeners could get out and do if they want to see this vision of solar being expanded and not contracted, realized.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me just say a word right now on what's happening at this very moment and then what your listeners can do. Right now, because the attacks don't stop, right now the Newsom administration has proposed to break the contract, the state's contract with, and I'm talking directly to your listeners who have solar. The Newsom administration is proposing to break the state's contract with you, with your solar contract. They signed an agreement with you. You signed an agreement with the utility in the state that guarantees that you can be on net metering for 20 years. And they are proposing to break that contract, slash the credit that you get for sharing that extra energy back to the grid, and then slapping you with a solar tax on top of that. If this proposal goes through, it's going to affect anyone who went solar before April 15th, 2023. That's roughly 2 million customers. Chances are you're an M2 customer or an M1. This will affect you. We need to make this proposal dead on arrival in the legislature. It's not a bill yet. It's just a proposal that Governor Newsom's CPUC has made at the request of Governor Newsom. But we do expect that he's going to try to turn it into, get it into the state budget sometime this spring. And now is the time for you to make this dead on arrival with your assembly member and your senator. You can do this by going to our website. It's solarrights.org, solarrights.org. Just solar, one word, rights like the Bill of Rights.org. And our homepage has both a way that you can send a message to your representatives, follow up with a phone call. We've got videos. We've got articles that explain this and all the other things that we've talked about. I expect that by the time you are listening to this, it'll be a little bit from when we're talking. This is still going to be very much a live wire action by the time that we do. And so you can take action. Actually, this week, something like 15,000 people have called their legislators telling them don't break the solar contract. And I am very confident that by the time you are hearing this, your assembly member and senator is still going to need to hear from you.
I love it. Well, unless there's anything you want to add, I think that's a good place to leave the conversation. I wish we could put all this entire conversation into the radio show, but someday in the not too distant future, I promise it will see the light of day, because I just think there's so much for people to grab a hold of here. There's a lot of history. There's a lot of, and I think this is all pretty understandable to most folks in California. The sun is shining. We should be taking advantage of that and putting those electrons to work in our local communities and even in our own homes. So, Dave, thank you so much.
Yeah, really fun.
From the Roots Up is brought to you by the Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club, there's always something happening. This is my favorite part of the show. This is where we talk about what we can do. We've given you all the darkness. We've said, here are all the bad things that are happening. So here's a thing you have to do. Well, one thing. If you are going to support a candidate for office, and even if you, like, they're your best friend, you have to ask them to take a no PG&E pledge, a no investor-owned utility money pledge, a no fossil fuel pledge, something that says, hey, I don't want this corrosive influence in your lawmaking. I don't want it in your decision making. And we need to also do a better job of calling out when PG&E is supporting candidates. When somebody's taking a lot of PG&E money, when somebody's getting a lot of PG&E money thrown their way, we, the people, have to call it out. Because let's be clear, that money that they're getting is going to media outlets. Media outlets don't have any financial incentive to ever call out money in politics, because a lot of that money is going to their bottom line and paying their salaries. We have to start demanding a better regulation from the CPUC too. So whenever the CPUC is the California Public Utilities Commission, sorry, I won't use acronyms all the time. Whenever they're asking to change something, right, they seek public comment. So we need to be on top of them. Find out what's going on with utilities and then demand that the California Public Utilities Commission does its job and actually regulates these investor-owned utilities. We're going to have a gubernatorial election coming up here in California. Let's make this a campaign issue. Let's tell these candidates that we want an independent CPUC, that we want regulators who are not bought and sold and don't have a revolving door with the people they regulate. That could make an enormous difference in the way our electric bills look, in the types of laws that gets passed, the amount of increases we face, which seems like every couple of months they're going back and asking for more money and raising our bills. We need to demand better laws of the folks that are elected, and laws that make it easier to form public utilities. We should make it easier for smaller communities, neighborhoods, whatever, to form their own utility and compete. These things sometimes are just called microgrids. Sometimes it's like when I was in El Dorado County, there was a guy who literally was going to turn part of his farm into a solar farm and sell the electricity locally. These things could happen if we made it easier. And then, you know, of course, when the people running these things are local and they're people you know, and they're not trying to run it just for the profit of distant investors, we can actually make sure that our electrical utilities, our whatever utilities, are run for our need and benefit, not run for profit. We also need to make laws that make solar and other renewable generation possible for all people in all economic situations, including generation at multifamily dwellings like apartment buildings that can be shared among tenants, generation at farms like I just talked about, and generation in other public spaces and buildings. If we start doing that, right, the more that is generated locally, right, the less we are dependent upon distant generation. It's gotten to the point where there's like a coal plant in, I think it's southern Utah, that is providing energy to California because it's cheaper to do that than it is to, say, pay people to generate their own electricity. And that doesn't have a benefit for anyone. So I think we need to make it easier for people to generate their own electricity. Obviously, you know, and we'll talk about this later when we do an episode about the climate crisis. You know, we're going to need all kinds of generation that's renewable. And that's going to mean generated locally, generated distantly. I mean, we're going to have so much renewable need, and that can be all kinds of different renewables, not just solar, that we're going to need it everywhere. But, you know, the bottom line is we should be making it easier for people to generate locally where they can. We need laws that prevent the revolving door between regulators and those they regulate. And we need to make sure that those laws have teeth, including massive fines and even jail time, if that's what it takes to make people stop doing these things. We need laws that make large shareholders accountable for damages caused by the companies they own, and to make officers of those companies personally and criminally liable for crimes committed by their companies. If the CEO of PG&E had been held liable for the 84 counts of manslaughter that they were convicted of, I guarantee that the next CEO would have been very interested in upgrading their equipment, in maintaining their lines, in finding ways to prevent these things from happening again, because they don't want to go to jail. But when the fines are low and there is no consequence for committing crime at scale, they are going to continue to do it, because there is no incentive on the other side to prevent them from wanting to do it. These are the things we can do together right now. And if we start with just the little one and work our way up, eventually we're going to make the change we need, as it is with any other issue. As I always say, everything seems impossible until the moment it's possible. Thank you for joining me again on From the Roots Up. I hope you'll join me every week as we delve into a topic like this, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com.